on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
And you're on.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to this Friday, November 14th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'm excited to be here with you over the next 50 minutes or so, doing what we do on this show, going over interesting topics, talking about market-moving stories, and most importantly, answering your finance and investment questions. I know we're all excited, like I am. Thanksgiving is it fewer than 2 weeks away now? That is absolutely crazy. And the holidays will be right around the corner after that. And there is a lot of time off this time of year, but that means that it's even more important that you don't mentally check out from the daily grind. Because as we've seen this year, as we see each and every single year, everything out there affects markets, everything out there affects our portfolios, and everything out there affects our financial plans. Now, in just a bit, we'll dive into what we brought to the table today. We'll talk about the market performance. We'll run down that focus point and all those other topics. But before we get to that, let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to get your thoughts on TREX, ticker symbol T-R-E-X. Looks fairly undervalued here. It's not been doing incredibly well lately. Probably be holding it for the long term. I just wanted to get your thoughts. I appreciate it.
Ticker T-R-E-X, Trex Company. Unfortunately, when I first heard this, I thought maybe it was about dinosaurs. It is not. It is a manufacturer and distributor of wood alternative composite deckings, railings, and outdoor living products. Now, recently, this company has been, frankly, it's been struggling a bit since the middle of 2025. And for what it's worth, been on somewhat of a consistent downtrend for the better part of the last 4 years. Year to date, it's down 53.96%. Over the past 3 months, down 51, down 55 over the past 52 weeks. And that's in spite of annualized growth of 9.1% over the past 5 years. But when you break it down further, you'll see that there hasn't been much growth since 2021, when they had $1.1 billion in revenue, $1.19 billion. This year, it's projected to be 1.158 net income, falling from 226 million to 196 million. So what's really been driving this price action? Poor performance. Q3 performance did not look solid. They cut their future outlook. They saw softness in home improvement and the housing market, sluggish demand in renovation and remodeling, rising competition, and rising costs. And for a company, when costs rise, margins naturally compress a bit. You're seeing that EBITDA margin falling from 31.3 to 28.4 this upcoming year. And so on the backdrop of everything that we've been seeing, it makes sense that this company is now trading at 19.2 times price to forward-looking earnings, the low end of its range over the past 5 years, where it's been anywhere from 18.5 to 58.1. And so, as I said, right, this is a cyclical name that has been struggling for quite some time. And although the price has fallen off pretty aggressively, right, over 50% in the past year, in spite of it being down 1.67%, is a reason why it has a consensus hold rating. When you see companies, when you see names, when you see stocks that have downgrades in their earnings projections, and then associated analyst downgrades as well, that aren't showing much momentum, changes, and frankly, don't have many catalysts on the horizon in the short term, then you run the risk of catching a falling knife. So for TREX, the wood company, not a company about dinosaurs, gonna have to pass. Thanks for the call. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and my main focus point is an interesting one. Well, interesting to me, and hopefully I can make it interesting to you. It's about annuities. It's about demystifying annuities, talking about the types, the payouts, but most importantly, the trade-offs. We will look into a plain English guide on how annuities work, from fixed to variable and indexed options, plus fees and guarantees to watch. Also, another interesting story, all of China's gold purchases may not fully be known, but nonetheless, it has helped fuel this record rally. And elsewhere, while stocks are falling, you've seen oftentimes during the day they come off of those lows, and that's because of retail buy the dip investors. What does that mean for market structure? What does that mean for valuations? Should we have time at the end of the show? We'll touch on all the CapEx from OpenAI to Meta to Google and the billions and billions of dollars being spent on AI infrastructure as demand is starting to boom. So what does that mean for associated industries that tend to help with the build out? We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on how a young investor might invest their money and another on the Southern Copper Corporation, ticker SCCO, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And hopefully we hear from you live sometime throughout the show. With 2025 rounding down, now is a good time to identify and lock in your smart year-end moves. We are ready to help you with a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar, and this title says it all. Year-end tax toolkit, RMD planning, tax loss harvesting, and deferral strategies. It's all happening online and free of charge. The new Wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific time. Justin and I will be sharing the important money-saving information you'll need to manage your taxable income. Be sure to pre-register now at investtalk.com. And as always, my phone lines are open, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Now, with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Sid from North Carolina. Got a question about Devon Energy. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, I have it. Approximately 0.5% of my portfolio. Thank you for taking my call. And I've been holding for quite some time. It's more or less sideways, almost no profit, no loss kind of a scenario, because the price is somewhere between 30 to 45 and then again back to around the same place. So I'm just looking for a long-term strategy with this name. Should I hold, buy more, or take my investment out, because I hardly have a 7-8% of profit after holding for almost 2 years. So looking for your input. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great question. Devon Energy, it is a U.S. independent energy company. So what they do is they focus on exploring, developing, and producing both oil, natural gas, and NGLs. They operate in Delaware as well as other places, but that's a big major point of their operation. You know, it has actually been outperforming its industry this year. It's up 9.5% year to date. That is a 3.1% outperformance relative to its industry, but it's been struggling. And the reason why it's been struggling is because nearly 60% of its revenue comes from oil. Now, Q3 2025 results, revenue rose about 7.6% year over year in spite of what has been happening with oil. They also have pretty strong free cash flow generation. Q3 of this year, they are operating cash flow about $1.7 billion free cash flow, $820 million. And most importantly, they returned $401 million to shareholders via dividends and share repurchases. So when you're talking about, okay, what's my return been? Well, you've also gotten a pretty solid dividend over the past couple of years, 7.6% in 2023, 6.1% in 2024. What they've been trying to do is optimize their business, scale better, cut their costs, but it's kind of difficult in an environment such as we've had in the energy space. Now, I don't think you should have a large allocation to oil right now. I think it's reasonable to have a small allocation to oil because, well, we saw with the IEA story I talked about earlier, oil demand, it ain't going anywhere other than up for the foreseeable future. So from a long-term perspective, buying some of these oil companies at the lows can be beneficial. You sit there, you may grow more slowly, you get solid dividends, and it's more stable. Energy demand comes back, stand to gain a lot. You're sitting about 0.5%. You said that's what your allocation is. So, you know, if you want to have a 0.5% allocation to this name, I think that's perfectly reasonable. Understand that within the energy space, this is not the most booming of names because, frankly, it's not the, let's say, you know, most exciting of businesses, right? It's not uranium, which has been doing particularly well. It's not midstream pipeline names, natural gas names that have been doing particularly well. So, you know, I think that it's perfectly reasonable to have that low of an allocation. If you told me you had 5-7%, I'd say trim it down. But I think 0.5% is perfectly fine. Thanks for the call. Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks overall, I'd say mixed. You had indices moving in somewhat opposite directions. The NASDAQ, which has been lagging recently, up 13 basis points, while the S&P 500 was down about 5. The Dow, though, down 65, while the Russell 2000 was up 22. NASDAQ Russell 2000 added to last week's declines. You know, overall, not a lot of standouts today in either direction. There were some bright spots with the AI trade, but overall, a lot of poor performance. Big tech was mostly lower in spite of NVIDIA being stronger. Energy, biotech, software, builders, some of the better performers on the day. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit weaker. Yields were up 2-4 basis points on the day. The dollar index up 20 basis points. Gold finished down 2.4%. Rough day for Bitcoin, down 3.8%. Crude oil settling up 2.4, a bit of reprieve for a really beaten down commodity. You know, we had a bit of volatility earlier in the week, and today offered a little bit of semblance maybe towards stabilization after that big momentum unwind. But not much has really changed from a fundamental perspective, right? This unwind is not unsurprising. There's seasonal dynamics. There's really crowded long trades. But retail buyers are still there. Fed speak has continued to lead a bit hawkish. Next week shaping up to be a fairly eventful week. You have NVIDIA earnings. You have the start of retail earnings season with Walmart. You have another barrage of Fed speak. And you have the NFP report for September. Like I mentioned, a lot of Fed speak today, pretty hawkish. Frankly, rate odds currently sitting at about 50-50. Maybe that is even a little bit too high. You have members of the Fed that are hawkish, members of the Fed that are dovish. So it's really going to be, frankly, I think one of the most interesting meetings that we'll have in quite some time. Overall, though, writ large, nothing really incremental from what we saw from the Fed. More business as usual. Certainly looking ahead to next week. I believe we're going to get some lag data that wasn't released due to the shutdown, so could be an interesting one. I want to briefly mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, I'm going to give you an update on the current market environment because there's been a lot that's happened since we gave our last one. So look for that section. Should be an interesting one. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned an American pawn shop owner and a global manufacturer of commercial flooring. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on separating a fantasy portfolio from a real one. Very cryptic. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. For all of you subscribers, the newsletter will hit your inbox on Saturday afternoon. Headed into a break. We've already had one live call today, and I would love to have another because sometimes just having Jorge in my ear, Tom in my ear, I get a little lonely. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Year-end tax toolkit, RMD planning, tax loss harvesting, and deferral strategies. It's all happening online and free of charge. The new Wealth Webinar, Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Time. Pre-register now at investtalk.com.
Annuities are boring, but it doesn't mean that you can just ignore them and not understand them. So let's try and demystify them a little bit and give you a bit of a plain English guide on how they work. The basics. Annuities are contracts. They are sold by insurance companies. And effectively what they're doing is they are swap your premiums, either your lump sum or monthly payments, for a guaranteed stream of income later in life. What they're trying to do is solve the most critical problem. How long are you going to live? Too many people outlive their assets. So they try and help you with the fear of not having income throughout your retirement. During the life of an annuity, there are two phases. The first, when you are paying those premiums, is called the accumulation phase. You're funding it. Now, when you start to take the money out, let's say in the form of payouts, well, that's called your, unsurprisingly, payout phase. This is when income begins. This is when taxes start to be paid because they're deferred until you withdraw. Now, buyers can choose immediate annuities where you get instant income, often after a windfall, or deferred annuities that grow tax deferred until a future retirement date. Regulation can be a little bit hairy, as it tends to be, right? It depends on the structure of the annuity. Variable annuities fall under the SEC and FINRA oversight, while fixed and most index annuities are handled by state insurance regulators. Now, the key here, and one of the worst parts of owning an annuity, is that your liquidity is not great. It's pretty limited. Withdrawals will typically trigger what is called a surrender charge for years. And early distributions, kind of like your 401k before age 59 and a half, may also carry tax penalties. Annuities aren't one size fits all. They can be changed, right? Many annuities add optional income riders that guarantee lifetime income because these riders can increase costs and must be evaluated carefully. Riders can be layered for added features such as death benefits, terminal illness access, inflation adjustments. But as with anything in life, when you start to enhance what a core product is, well, it's going to be a bit more expensive. And all of this sounds like it might be a good idea, right? You're thinking to yourself, man, self, I'm really worried that I will outlive my assets. And if I can effectively take out an insurance product, an insurance, because insurance tries to hedge against risk, right? That's what insurance does. What risk is this hedging against? It's called longevity risk, that you outlive your money. Well, this sounds pretty darn good. But here's the thing. The reason why you and I are talking about this right now is because most of them are inherently complex. They're also very, or can be very costly. Surrender periods can stretch for a decade or more. And oftentimes the person who is selling you this amazing product, this fantastic product that is going to help you in your retirement with your income stream, they're incentivized to do so with commissions. They add friction to returns. These products can be incredibly expensive. Compared to life insurance, which protects against dying too soon, annuities protect, again, against the opposite, living longer than your assets. Annuities can appear in workplace retirement programs thanks to the SECURE Act, which now allows 401k investors to lock in lifetime income if employers choose to offer them. But I say this to clients all the time, and sometimes annuities are right for certain people. But because of the complexity and customizability and commission structure of the industry, you have to be incredibly careful. A lot of annuities will protect you from the downside in terms of, okay, well, maybe you can't have a negative return year over year, but they will cap your upside. A lot of them have very, very expensive fees. A lot of them have investment options that are not great. And so I've always been in favor of, and for the average investor, this is certainly hard to reach because you may not understand the complexities of portfolio allocation, portfolio construction, that if you're looking for a certain layer of income, if you're looking for a certain return profile, if you have an investment horizon, you can, with the help of an advisor, create a structured plan for yourself that gives you the benefit of not having those cost overlays, that gives you the benefit of having the immediate liquidity should you need to draw down from those assets. Ultimately, annuities work best for retirees who value stability over that flexibility. You're trading a pool of cash for the security of a guaranteed paycheck tomorrow. But as with anything, it's critical to understand how it works, what you're paying for it, and what's really in that darn product. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: don't outlive your nest egg, strategies to make savings last. That's Monday. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero and ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
The Invest Talk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Go to Jane in the Bay Area. Got a question about CTSH. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
Well, thank you for taking my call. For tax loss harvesting, I was wondering whether I should get rid of CTSH or DOW, Dow.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is a tax loss harvesting question because it is that time of year. And honestly, great question, because we'll also be talking about tax loss harvesting in our upcoming wealth webinar. So, you know, check that out if that interests you. But taking a look at these names, for those of our listeners who don't know, the benefit, or I guess the consolation prize, we'll say, for holding a name that is performing poorly and has lost you money, is that you can loss harvest, you can sell it, realize those losses, either use them in that taxable year, or have what is called a capital loss carry forward into the next year if it doesn't offset your gains this year. Now, when you sell something, you have what is called a wash sale period over which you cannot rebuy a like security. And so, you know, for a stock that's easy, if you're talking about an A-share, you can't buy the A-share of Dow if you sell Dow. The reason why I like security is important is because maybe we're talking about certain options or anything like that. Now, this question is about Dow or CTSH. Well, Cognizant Technologies is a IT technology consulting and business processing outsourcing company. So it's overall what they do is they help clients modernize their operations via cloud, AI, data, and digital engineering solutions. Relative strength has been pretty flat over the past 5-6 years. They haven't done too well this year, down 5.57% in spite of having an okay year in 2023 and a not great year in 2024. The other company is a fundamentally different company, right? Dow. It is a materials science company. So they have a bunch of segments. They're packaging, they're specialty plastics, they're industrial intermediates, they're infrastructure. Relative strength looks horrendous going into 2025. Year to date, down 42.86%. Over the past 52 weeks, down 48.58%. Net income, negative. They're issuing a bunch of new debt to go on top of their $16 billion of existing debt. And you know what? They're a $16 billion market cap company. Cognizant, $34 billion market cap company, far less debt. Net income at least positive, margins though contracting at least positive. If I had to choose between two of these, because the question is twofold. One, which one may you potentially want to hold, but you at least don't want to hold it for 31 days and get that tax loss, right? Because you don't want it to move against you, because you can sell something like that. The other is, what do you just want to get rid of? Looking at performance, looking at technicals, looking at everything, I think Dow is a great candidate for tax loss harvesting. But honestly, you can carry these capital losses forward. If you're thinking about loss harvesting one of these names, why not both? Thanks for the call. Now on Fridays, we like to run down a bit of a list of key benchmark numbers. So let's start that off. The two-year treasury yield was at 3.616% today. Last week, that number was 3.56%. And 202 weeks ago, odd number, it was 0.64%. The 10-year treasury yield was at 4.15 compared to last week when it was at 4.09. Compare that to 200 weeks ago, it was 1.762. Gold, $4,073 per ounce. That is a $72 increase compared with last week. 15 weeks ago, that number was 3,348, and 194 weeks back, that number was 1,806. Silver today, $50.91 per ounce. That is a $2.61 increase compared with last week. 92 weeks back, it was 2,280. And looking back 186 weeks, silver was 2,394. Oil, $59.95 per barrel, 20 cents higher compared with last week. 60 weeks ago, that number was $67.79. And 102 weeks back, that number was $74.30. All the way back 201 weeks, the number was $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.08, the same as last week. 128 weeks ago, though, that number was $3.56. 176 weeks back, that number was $4.25. California. Gas was $4.67 per gallon, a 2-cent decrease compared to the last week. 106 weeks ago, that number was $5.32. And 182 weeks back, that number was $5.87. For comparison, in Missouri, gas is averaging $2.71 per gallon. That is $1.96 less per gallon than gas in California. Let's talk about gold. Because everyone's buying it. You're seeing prices skyrocket over the past 19 months. But one particular buyer has been a bit of a mystery in global markets, and that is China. Analysts are now estimating its unreported purchases may be more than 10 times the official figures. Now, while Beijing claims to have bought just a couple of tons per month this year, traders and researchers believe the real number is closer to 250 tons, a massive share of global central bank demand. Now, this surge, if it were accurate, ties directly to China's push to diversify away from the US dollar, a strategic de-dollarization effort unfolding both quietly and loudly behind the scenes. Unlike oil, which can be tracked by satellites, gold is pretty opaque. And what that does is it gives central banks, and therefore countries, pretty ample room to build reserves without triggering market panic or political backlash for the decisions that are being made. But traders are a bit creative. And so they started saying, how can we think about this? Well, what they did is they looked at indicators such as shipments of newly cast 400-ounce bars with consecutive serial numbers moving from Swiss and South African refiners to China. With that in mind, some experts now believe China's true holdings may be closer to 5,000 tons of gold, double what it officially reports to the IMF. And this opaque understanding of what people are buying, it extends beyond China. Only 1/3 of global central bank gold purchases were formally reported last quarter, down sharply from 90% just 4 years ago. Many emerging market countries, for example, are choosing to secretly buy to avoid front-running. They want to avoid market distortions. They want to avoid political frictions with the U.S., where gold accumulation is often viewed as adversarial because it's a hedge against American power. There's also been some historical issues that reinforce why a country might want to be silent. The UK's infamous 1999 announcement of gold sales that pushed prices even lower locked in a huge loss for taxpayers. China has also been spreading across multiple entities its purchases, including its sovereign wealth fund, the military, all of which have about zero obligation to disclose these reserves. Another way they've been looking at it, they use proxies like UK export data and the gap between China's imports, domestic mining, and consumer demand. Both methods suggesting some pretty massive hidden purchases. Then the result has been pretty clear. A gold market dominated by central banks whose true intentions remain unknowable. They create a price environment where opaque state demand, rather than investor sentiment, increasingly dictates the direction of the world's most ancient safe haven. Let's keep things moving and dip back into the investor voice bank, for this call, which came in earlier from Arizona.
My name is Jacob from Arizona. I'm a pretty young investor. And I just had a few questions for you guys. I do have a lot of money kind of sitting in the bank, which I do not like, as I know that money sitting in the bank doesn't really do anything for you, especially when you're young. So do you guys suggest playing it safer and allocating more of my portfolio towards ETFs and things, or should I kind of play it more risky? What are the best options that you guys would give a young investor here? I appreciate all the information you guys give out, and I look forward to the answer in the podcast. Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, Jacob, I'm glad you're thinking about the right things as a young investor. And so let's start with financial planning 101 here. When you have an income, what you want to do is first have your emergency fund. Beyond your emergency fund, you want to have your retirement savings, maybe big purchase savings. And each of those have different time horizons, meaning you have different risk tolerances and different liquidity needs. Your emergency fund is your lowest risk tolerance with your highest liquidity needs. It's for if you get laid off, if you become ill, if for any reason you need money now. And therefore, what shouldn't you put it in? Probably shouldn't put it in an emerging market ETF, right? Very risky. Though it's liquid, very risky. You probably shouldn't put it in a 10-year CD. Why? Very little risk, but not very liquid. Not liquid at all. And so that is a way to put context to this answer here. If this money is money you're saving for retirement, you are young. You are young, which means you have a long horizon, which means you can take on more risk because you can earn back the money if you lose some of it. Now, that doesn't mean you just throw it at, you know, any guy on the street corner that says, hey, I got an idea, Jacob, I really need some money. But what it means is you can put it in equities. And for somebody that's not paying attention 24/7 to markets and doesn't want to do the necessary research on individual companies, ETFs can be a great tool for that. There are no one-size-fits-all description of ETFs. They can be very risky. They can be very diversified. They can follow the Wilshire 5000. They can follow the Russell 3000. Or they can be leveraged single-stock ETFs. Now, we've talked all the time about why you probably shouldn't buy into the latter and hold that for the long period of time. But my point is, they provide you all of these options. And so you can choose what makes the most sense for not just your general risk tolerance level, but what the purpose of this money is. Thanks for the call. Let's go for two in a row on 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. I was hoping you guys could do an analysis of Brinks Co. Ticker is BCO. Bravo, Charlie, Oscar. I like the sector that it's in. I feel like security is something that we'll need and probably need more of in the future. And hoping you guys could tell me if you thought that this company could be a good buy. You guys could also just touch on why there could be such a big fluctuation in a company like this's earnings, so I can get a better understanding of how these companies work. And I'll listen on the podcast, guys. Thanks as always. Take care. Bye.
Brinks Company. Maybe you've seen those Brinks trucks driving around. It is a global security and cash management business. So they operate those armored vehicles and they transport for vaulting and ATM services. They also got a digital retail solutions business and they do other types of secure transport. And they're a global company, 26% Latin America, 24% in Europe, 33% in the United States. Now, the company exceeded expectations in Q2. They've seen strong organic growth and margin expansion. International revenue trends, specifically in Latin American countries, have drawn a bit of attention because of macro tailwinds. Their dividend looks like has been increased in the past 6 months, which is always the sign of a company with robust cash flow. Revenue has grown 6.4% on an annualized basis going back to 2019. It's been pretty consistent, steady growth as well. Looks like from 2024 to 2025, revenue growth is dipping below 5% because it's only grown about $200 million on $5 billion. But still, solid growth. Net income up 41.7%. But your question is, why is net income all over the place? Well, it's because it looks like they've become a bit more efficient, right? If you go up the income chain, if you will, all the way from net margin to EBITDA margin, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, it's expanded a bit. Their gross margins are expanding as well. If you go even higher, 2024, 25.3% gross margin, 24% in 2023. Looking at relative valuations, it looks also pretty reasonable as well. 12.6 is where it's trading in terms of price to forward-looking earnings, and it's been a good performer, two of the past 3 years. 2023 was up 63.7%, massive outperformance. Last year, it underperformed both the S&P and its industry. It was only up 5.5, but this year, it's up 20% year-to-date, up 18.66% over the past 52 weeks. Now, I do agree with you. Security is one of the most important hot button topics, not just for individuals, but for businesses, which is who this primarily serves. What I like to see is free cash flow growing. And it's kind of, all over the place. Net operating cash flow has fallen off. Their dividend is reasonable, about 1% dividend yield. But frankly, I'm seeing pretty solid growth. I'm seeing pretty solid growth internationally, which is something that we like to see. And all at a pretty reasonable valuation. So overall, I do like what I am seeing here. I like your ideas. I like it. That is Brinks Company, that driver of those big old armor trucks, ticker BCO. I cannot believe it is already Friday. We are almost all the way to the weekend. Before we get to the weekend, we got one more break to get through. We got a couple more questions to answer. And if you got a burning question on your mind that just cannot keep for the next 2 days, 3 days, I guess, give me a call now. It's your last chance. 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got one more live call. Carol from Alameda, how can we help you?
Hi. In my Charles Schwab account, I've held a stock since the 1990s. It's ticker symbol RHHBY.
Okay.
It's Roche Company. It's ADR, and it doesn't trade over the on NYSE or at NASDAQ. And I can't trade it electronically because of the special trading situation. I was wondering, how would I go about checking out how to actually sell my shares?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, sometimes this picture can be a little bit complicated here, but you do have the benefit of having it custodied at an account at Charles Schwab. Have you tried calling into Charles Schwab, having them connect you to the trading desk about trading it for you?
Well, I'm not really sure I want to trade it, but I'd like to know more about how it's doing.
Well, if you want to know how it's
evaluated,
how it's doing, certainly in your Charles Schwab account, you should be able to log in, look at your balances, look at your holdings, and you can see a tax report of gains and loss since the time you've held it. You said you held it since the 90s. So certainly, you know, there would be a bit of a gain on there. You can also use some public data services to take a look at how it's performing on a daily basis. We have FactSet, which we pay a lot of money for, but you don't need that much data. You can use something like Yahoo Finance.
Well, I can look at the charts. I can look at the charts, but then there's a factor of a foreign currency that it's traded in.
Well,
there's also ADR fees and taxes, and I've never really thought that through.
No, that's entirely fair. So if it is an ADR stands for American Depository Receipt, which means effectively what is happening is there is a share of this company, Roche Holdings, and Roche Holdings sits in a bank. And there's a certain amount of shares of Roche Holdings that sit in that bank that correspond to this ADR, this depository receipt, okay? Which means that if you were to sell this ADR, you would get back U.S. dollars, so you wouldn't have to worry about any currency movements. Typically, the price of an ADR is going to reflect the changes in currency as well. That way, there's no what's called an arbitraging opportunity between the two. So because you hold this ADR rather than a local line, you should not have that concern about currency.
Okay.
Awesome.
So,
like I said,
what I sell will be probably what I get.
Exactly. Yes. When you do want to sell it, I would give a call to Charles Schwab because some of these things that trade OTC over the counter can be a little complicated. But really, just a good lesson for anyone out there listening who might hold on to an over the counter ADR. Thanks for the call. Enjoy your weekend. As you may have known, may have witnessed, there's been a bit of a global sell-off in various U.S. stocks. But on Friday, it's run into one of the strongest forces over the past couple months, and that is retail investors saying, I'm going to buy this dip. Right after the opening bell, you saw it. NVIDIA, Oracle, other AI leaders, they sank hard. They sank very hard. But that's when investors started moving in. And they said, no, we're just going to keep buying this dip. And so what that has done is, in a way, it's kind of muddled the picture. You've seen these huge sell-offs. But when by the end of the day, things have clawed back, you don't see the volatility during the day unless you're looking for it. So under the surface, understandably, people are starting to get nervous about whether Silicon Valley's massive AI spending on chips and data centers is actually going to earn its keep. And that anxiety is now starting to collide with a wave of delayed economic data following this shutdown, just as signs of the U.S. economy slowing is beginning to emerge. And therein lies the reason for this return in volatility, and why the theme that has driven prices higher may be starting to unwind a bit. And that's the problem with just looking at prices at the end of the day to see how things are doing. You have to understand the market structure that is going on underneath. You have to understand the price action, the volume action, what is going on throughout the day. Only by diving in can you really get a clear, unmuddied picture. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can all get at iTunes or Spotify. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. And while you're at it, why don't you go check out our Invest Talk YouTube channel? Just search Invest Talk with two T's. As always, if today's show made you think about your own financial picture and whether it's all really working together the best it can for your future, give us a call, because at KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and a little bit of confidence to your financial lives. Quick reminder, our newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, December 9th, happening online. It is free. Still got to register at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.